This is CliffCentral.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Leadership and Education Show, the last half hour of the Leadership Platform. And today's guest is Milani Smuts, who is the CEO and founder of Streetlight Schools. Welcome, Milani.
Hi, Barbara.
Good to have you on the show. Perhaps you can start by telling us about you and your background and what led you to this place in education today.
Thanks. Yeah, rather unusually, I guess I'm not actually from an education background. I'm a failed lawyer who, during her legal studies, became very involved in certain education projects in Khayelitsha and Langa. And it was really seeing these schools in these communities that made me realize that unless we radically change the way that education functions in this country, we're going to really battle as a society. And this seemed to me to be the most important and interesting problem that we faced as a country, and certainly more interesting than learning about lease agreements or whatever. So I stopped trying to be a lawyer and I started to think about how I could create something that could make a meaningful intervention in education in South Africa. And this journey led me to go work at a school in rural India, and eventually come back and start Streetlight Schools, which is a non-profit that is developing innovative, affordable models for primary schools in low-income communities in South Africa.
And these are replicable models. The idea is that you want to have a number of schools
this. The essential question that we're trying to answer is, how do we create really high-quality educational paradigms in communities that currently don't have access to quality education? And how do we do that within the existing resources of the country? So without sort of spending more than we could spend in districts and provinces, or using human resources that aren't, you know, replicable, how do we actually, as a country, get to a point where we create the best version of the education system that we can actually have? But to do so in a way that's really ambitious. So yes, the idea is to create many schools.
Okay, so it's a replicable, scalable model. Mm-hmm. The model is a not-for-profit model, and you're focusing on primary schools.
That's right.
So tell us about what's unique about Streetlight Schools. What is the model of a Streetlight School?
So I think there's two things. One is the approach, and the second thing is the model. So the approach is to say that there are no sacred cows in our model. So if you come to our first school, Jeppy Park Primary, you will see that everything from the furniture to the school uniforms to the timetable to the approach that teachers take, all of these things have been thought through very carefully and interrogated, and we've really, with every aspect and detail, and I think a lot of school leaders will know what I'm talking about when I say there's so many processes that go into running a school. Every single one of these have been interrogated to ask, is there a reason why we do this way? Is there a more interesting or more creative or more effective way that we could be doing this? You know, why do we have to do it this way? And it was really, so the approach is really to reimagine what a school could look like in that fundamental way. Our model relies on what is sort of fundamentally a cost-quality nexus. So to think about what are the real cost drivers in education, and how do we make sure that those don't go crazy out of control. But every time we think about that, how do we make an intervention that actually improves quality? And the good news is if you take a very innovative approach, that's actually very possible. Because of a lot of modern research that shows that learning, the way that we learn as a species, is very social. It's very collaborative. And it works best when we engage the world around us. So if it's relevant. In addition to which, we're in an incredibly exciting moment where technology has, for the first time in human history, made it possible to really personalize learning in a way that isn't radically expensive, like having a personal tutor for every every child. So if you take a given school day and you go from 100% instruction, so that the way that we remember school, where you sit in a class and you listen to a teacher and they convey content, and then you go to another class and the same thing happens, and that's your school day, you go from that model to a model where children shift through different modalities of learning in a given day. So they go from having a, say, a numeracy class to having a technology class to having an art and inquiry class. And this way we are able to widen the scope of learning that a learner has in a given day, but actually use our resources for core teaching in a far more effective way.
Okay, so you spoke about social and collaborative learning. Just explain a little bit about how you inculcate and drive that in the school. What, just literalize that and explain what happens in class.
I mean, I think the most important thing is to think about learning as happening not through the memorization of content, but the active inquiry, trying to answer a question. So where we're ultimately trying to go is, the example I always use is from a school in Texas called Acton Academy. And they wanted to learn about parabolas one day. And the teachers took all the children outside and they shot these tennis balls out of a sort of a projectile. And they were shooting these tennis balls and it was great fun. And then the teachers said to the children, they said to them, you know, this is about parabolas. I know this isn't something you've heard about before, but what's happening here has to do with a parabola. And in the afternoon, we're going to come back and we're going to try and predict where these tennis balls are going to land. But until that time, you are all going to work together to try and find out what a parabola is and how it's going to help you predict where this tennis ball is going to land. So they all went off and they all did research on parabolas and they all discussed it with each other. You know, how would I apply this to the tennis ball problem and how is this going to make us, you know, understand how this works? And then in the afternoon they came back and what the teachers did in that intervention is they asked, you know, they were like, oh, okay, well, you guys are quite off. What happened here? Let's go through your reasoning. Let's, you know, and that is a far more social, a far more engaged way of learning. Now, we are in the process, we're 10 weeks into opening our first school. So with our 5 and 6-year-old learners, we can't quite get to that level yet. But what we are doing at the moment is a sort of workshop model where we rotate through different numeracy and core literacy programs to help them understand, like, you know, if you count 5 like this and I count 5 like this, how do we get to this? And really just driving it more from an educator's role as giving answers to an educator's role being opening up a world of questions for learners.
So enabling inquiry and engagement.
Absolutely.
And opening up 21st century lines of inquiry.
Absolutely.
For learners.
Absolutely. And fundamentally seeing learning as a journey that learners want to go on, instead of something that we as educators have to actively manage and control for our learners all the time.
So what you're describing is a peer-to-peer model where learners are working with each other in collaborative groups, not as single individuals, engaging only with a textbook, for example, that helps them with things like problem solving and communication skills. You're also talking about something that's project driven. The parabola example is a good example of a project at work and the prediction that comes with working together in a real life context. And then you're using technology to enable the customization of the content for learners. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. And this is, as I said to you, at the moment we're working with grade R and grade 1 learners, most of whom have had very little exposure to early childhood development at all. And even with these learners, there are incredible things that you can do. So at the moment we're doing a few weeks long thematic inquiry into my community. What is my community? And we take all the learners out, and they go to the shops in the area, and they ask questions of the shop owners, and then you can take a project like that and build on it in many different ways. You can scaffold numeracy into that. Let's open a shop in the school. Let's buy things, you know, and that's a very easy numeracy lesson to do. Or let's take all the Lego that we have and we build. We build a Lego version of our community in this environment, and these things are not particularly more complex or expensive than what we're already expecting in schools now, but it just allows us to connect everything we're doing to a bigger picture, a bigger world. And children respond to that, and it allows them to deepen their knowledge. And I think this is one of the big takeaways from collaborative learning, is if you test learners who've sat in a more rote or industrial type class and they've heard content and they leave, versus a more social class, researchers found that social learning deepens over time. So you ask the same learners about a concept 3 weeks later, they know a lot more about it than the learners who learnt about it in a classical instructional sense, because those learners didn't actively engage, so they leave and they forget about it. Whereas the other learners, they go to the playground, they talk to their friends about it, they keep asking questions, because that's how they learnt it as well. So it deepens over time.
Okay, so on the show, our interest is leadership and educational leadership. Mm. So you've got an interesting leadership situation in your context. You are the founder and CEO of this organization called Streetlight Schools. Mm. And as I understand it, the vision is to have a whole range of these schools. Mm. But actually, so far, you've opened one of them, and it's JP Park Primary, which is in JPstown in Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. And that school has a principal who you've appointed.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about, let's start with talking about that principal, how you found the principal and how you've helped to develop and capacitate that principal and prepare her for the context that she's in.
Wow. I mean, it's an incredible story. And I think a part of it was luck, because we had this huge vision for this school. You know, we're in one of the most underserved communities in Johannesburg, and we want to provide them with, you know, the kind of education that has rarely been seen in South Africa. And we want to do it on, you know, resources available within, say, the state budget. It's a very ambitious vision. And honestly, for most of last year, I was like, how will I ever find someone who I would pitch this idea to who said, yeah, okay, let's do it. And luckily, one day in August, I got an email from a woman who said, you know, I'm a Norwegian educator and I'm living in South Africa and I'm very, very interested in more innovative education models. Can I come see, basically? And at the time, I was looking at a number of candidates for the position of school leader. But nobody was quite right in terms of the combination of ambition and rigor, but also creativity and imagination. I think you need both. And then Heidi came in, and it was actually very lucky because, you know, I had some qualms about hiring an outsider, but one of my advisors happened to be in the school the day that she came through. And he watched her interact with her team and said, hire her immediately. This person's absolutely right. And I think the lesson for us has been, if you can find school leaders who know how to take a very asset-based approach to education and ask at every turn, what do we have available to us and how do we make the most out of these resources that we have available to us? Instead of saying, oh, you know, we can't do this because we don't have this yet, or this is a real problem for us. If you can find those asset-based leadership's sort of qualities in someone, that's really what you're looking for in a leader. And then what I do essentially is that I help, I help, or, you know, it's a partnership. together we develop these strategies. So we push each other in different directions. I will say, you know, we really need to try more of this. And Heidi will say, well, not until we've done this. And I think if you can keep that dynamic tension going, that's when you get the meaningful work done. Because I think a lot of the conversations around innovation in education, especially in schools, underestimate how much work goes into process. So all of the innovation work happens on the other side of great process, not in spite of just ignoring processes. So being really waxed on, you know, knowing where every teacher is at, knowing that your kids know where they're going in the next class, knowing that everybody knows what this module is about, that's at that point that you can start saying, okay, well, how do we do more free play? How do we get crazier with our thematic inquiries? You know, it's not before then. It's after that point where we start doing that work, and that's where a great school leader comes in. And the second very important thing, and this is a benefit of starting a new school, is having, you don't have to have the most experienced staff, but everybody has to have the right disposition. So having all staff be able to say, huh, I've never done it this way before, and certainly in the last 15 years of my education practice, this is how we've done, say, assessments. But hey, let's try this different approach. Let's try it. It becomes very difficult if you have educators who are like, but this is how we've always done it. So it's very important that you have leadership that can make educators feel safe to take those steps forward. And every school I've seen do innovative work have in their leadership this deep sense of optimism and this very clear clear vision and strategic drive. They know the picture towards which they're working, and they drive that, because otherwise it is very difficult to just step away from things that are familiar to you into a world that's sometimes difficult for educators to imagine.
And for you as the leader of the organization, mm-hmm. as you grow and more schools come on, how are you going to play your role as leader and also show your vision, your strategic drive, your deep sense of optimism and sense of the value of the assets available to you?
Absolutely. I think what I want to show and what I want my role to be is to have this conversation around what's possible in education in South Africa now. And it's, I want to help showcase, and now JP Park is the first of these, you know, this evidence that we have that actually, yeah, we are in a very deep crisis in education in South Africa, but it's not irredeemable. Within a relatively short amount of time, we've been able to create an educational model that can meaningfully address these issues of crises, not under unique circumstances. We don't, you know, we educate the children that show up at our door. And I want to broaden that conversation and bring more and more people into this idea and this concept that actually, if we are willing to be ambitious and dedicated and brave in education now, we can turn around this mess. We can do it. We just have to actually do it.
How will you know when you've been successful? How will you measure and evaluate success?
I think this is a very important question. And when I read the papers about education, this is the one that probably frustrates me the most, because we go into a paroxysm every time we hear about the matric results going a percentile point up or down. Oh God, you know, the science marks or whatever. And it's completely the wrong conversation to be having in education. What we should be talking about is big picture stuff. And national matric results actually aren't big picture thinks. What we should be talking about is early childhood first and foremost. So I think this isn't just because we're in primary education. It's because all the research shows what happens in the first 3 years of your schooling more or less predicts what's going to happen for the next 10 years. So what we should be doing, if we are going to talk about assessment, is look at where our early years are going and how we intervene on those. That's the first thing. The second thing we have to start doing as a society is looking at those non-cognitive metrics. Are children safe? Are they happy? Are they do they feel positive about their school environment? Because as out there as it sounds, those things are actually a much better predictor of whether children are going to go on and lead well-adjusted lives and succeed academically, cope with life stress, be active and participating members of society. It has to do with how functional your childhood was. And those are not questions we're asking at the moment. And especially in South Africa, where we have so much inequality, so much violence, and so much social disruption, to worry about like your grade 12 matric pass rate and not also be having massive conversations about what childhood in South Africa looks like is really misunderstanding what matters in education. That's the first thing. And I think the second thing is how do we evaluate success in this country? We should be backing new ideas. We should be backing people who are willing to risk it in education. We should be supporting people who are trying different approaches instead of being so deeply critical and competitive about everything. We should be collaborating more and more and more, because frankly, if all of us, whether you agree with someone or not, if all of us work our hardest for the next 20 years and we all have like uncharted growth rates, we are only going to start chipping away at the scale of the issue. So we really do have to start learning from each other, working together, and being more collaborative.
So working together and counting what counts. Melanie Smuts, thank you very much for being on the Leadership and Education Show today. Good luck with the growth of streetlight schools. And I'm sure you're on a very hard trajectory at the moment, but I hope it's a very successful one for you.
Thanks so much, Barbara.
Thank you.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye Gold, a proudly South African mining company. This is CliffCentral.com.